Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of the Detroit Lions Breakdown Podcast. I'm Joe Cania. With me, as always, is Eric Schlitt from PrideOfDetroit.com. Eric, the Lions cap off an 8-0 road record in the regular season, 40-34 wild win over the San Francisco 49ers. First time they beat the 49ers since 1975 in
Oh,
San
man.
Francisco, I should say, or in the Bay Area. They no longer play in San Francisco proper. Avenge the loss from the 2024, technically NFC Championship game, but it's not quite the same team. Niners rolled out there. I don't know. What do you think, Eric? It's all coming down to this Sunday, the 14-2 Lions against the 14-2 Minnesota Vikings, and just the first seed and NFC North Championship on the line. That's all.
Yeah, it would have been nice if the Packers could have gotten out of their own way. And
They were terrible
yeah, they did
until
not
near
look.
the end, and it was too late.
Yeah, by the end, Minnesota had just they were fighting the clock as opposed to fighting the Packers, and so they were just letting the Packers waste time and didn't care if they scored. But yeah, it's Minnesota's in a lot of these close games. I expect this to be another close game. And I can tell you on paper, I look at this game and I say, man, it looks like a tough one. It looks like it could be one of their hardest games that they're going to have the rest of the way. And then you watch them play and you're like, all right, I see how this goes. And then you watch the last game that they played against them, and you're like, oh yeah, they needed to have a defensive touchdown in order to stay in it. And you're like, all right, well, all right, I'm starting to remember a few more things here. And they all of a sudden become a little less daunting and a little less, scary, I guess. I understand the trepidation that a lot of people have. It's a team with an equally impressive record. And they find a way to win, just like Detroit does. And so it's an anything can happen type of game, right? In division, we always talk about that. Anything can happen. But I feel really good about this game. We're going to talk all about it, and I'm going to tell you what I think that the Lions need to do. But this is a game that they can walk out of as NFC North champs and the number one seed and the whole shebang, everything they've been working for, they can take care of business and get the win. And I, it's not as like worrisome, I think, as a lot of people are concerned about. So we'll address everything.
All right. First, we'll talk about the Niners win. Lions fall behind 21-13 at the half, but rally in the second half. It's all because of the offense. They continue to be extremely tough to stop. 40 points, did not punt once. Extra point blocked. They needed some seduction out of the kicker on the sideline to help just distract the 49ers. Bates hits a couple field goals, 57-yarder included. Hard to stop on offense.
Yeah, and that's a key. And if you look at the Lions of late, they average on the season 33.3 points a game. But
Team record.
over the last month, they haven't scored less than 34. They've scored over 40 twice in the last month. The offense, it's not just oh, they put up 40 against San Francisco, which is a feat in itself. But they've been consistently putting up over 34 points, and they are really problematic for teams right now. And the 49ers, they have a good defense. Like, they've had their fair share of injuries, but like we talked about, we were more concerned with, or they had been, more beat up on the offensive side of the ball. But the Lions, they didn't seem too out of sorts. You're playing from behind a little bit. What, almost the whole first half, or maybe the entire first half, right?
Yes,
And
yep.
then, and they just keep toeing the line and going. And you wait on your defense to give you a little bit of life. and all you need is a stop or two. And then you get those one or two stops, and then the offense is just going to, the offense wins the game for you. And so important couple of stops, and they would have had a hard time really pulling away, I think, without them. But they've gotten to the point where this defense can bend and break and bend and break and bend and break, but just all you have to do is bend and hold once or twice, and that's enough to win.
It's enough to win these games. I know you're gonna assure me as this podcast goes on that, like, yeah, this is no big deal. Like, they'll be able to stop every team a couple of times when it's like, oh, sure. I don't know, this can kind of run out at a certain point.
Well, I mean, that's all part of the equation, right? You need them to still be able to make a stop, and you get an unlucky break, or you get a lucky break, and the opponent's offense, you know, makes a mistake, and as long as you capitalize on it, then you're okay. Your offense is good enough to outscore people in a shootout right now. Like, so there's certainly some pretty massive flaws right now on the defensive side of the ball. I think they can be fixed as you bring talent back onto the roster, but you're kind
may
of
or may not happen.
Yeah. Which, yeah. Yeah. Which
this week, starting this week,
certainly looks like it's an option this week. The tea leaves certainly point to it being an option this week for sure. But if you return, you know, look, let's call it what it is. The biggest flaw on this defense is the linebackers. The will linebacker rotation that they've used has not cut it. The rotation of Long and Alexander, and then
a lot of missing tackles, a lot of chasing after guys.
Yeah, exactly. And so the Alexander Long Turner rotation wasn't working. You add Reeves Maven back into the mix. That's still nearly not working. He didn't really help a ton. You know, he's still acclimating, it seems like, but you were hoping for more. I feel like they got more production out of Nowoski than they did Reeves Maven last week. And so most of it was attacking the will linebacker and attacking, you know, because they ask a lot of the will linebacker in this defense. The will linebacker has to cover. The will linebacker has to run fit. And so it's an important spot. And if you can correct that spot, then you give yourself a much better chance to shore up some of the flaws around it. So it's not a perfect defense. It's not even close to what it was when they, you know, had Aiden Hutchinson and Aleem McNeil and Carlton Davis and et cetera. But for what they have and what they are accomplishing or what they're trying to accomplish, getting a guy like Alex Anzalone back is a huge deal. It could really be the difference in between not being able to stop an offense or being able to stop them 3-4 times. And like I said, you stop them twice, it's probably enough.
Yeah. And man, I don't know. We talk a lot about the defense going back to the offensive side.
Yes.
This is picking nits because so as the season has progressed and matured, the offensive line, you know, at the beginning of the year and in the middle of the year, has been fantastic, right? Like, nothing could stop them. Now there's cracks in the armor. They have some bad plays here and there, but it doesn't seem to matter because then they open up huge holes on a handful of other plays. They throw seven linemen out there and they're bowling their way for touchdowns. And, you know, maybe my worries watching them is no big deal. Can't put it all on the defense, but it's hard to put it anywhere else but the defense because they scored 40 points again in one. So, but right. I had to mention it. You know, Ragnow, it was driven in the backfield again, but it was only on a single play, you know, and was Bosa got past Sewell, you know, like, but I guess these things happen. We're going to see a lot. We're going to see this.
Yeah, he got past him once. He got past Decker a couple more times. And then I thought Glasgow looked better after taking that week off to get his knee right.
Better, yep.
And so it's not quite the fluid machine that it was, but it's still better than a lot of offensive lines out
Yeah,
there.
just about every team.
Right. And so I like you said, they're still getting huge gaps. They're still running plays that are confusing defenses. And like the JMO end around touchdown, like they run JMO in motion one direction, and then the linebackers start to shift in that direction, and then he reverses fields, takes the end around, and then all of a sudden, as the defense is flowing over, all of a sudden Graham Glasgow is out there blocking out by the slot because he does a little pull while everybody else slants. And so and it's a walk-in for him because of and they understand how to utilize their players to their maximum ability. Jared Goff is playing at an unreal level. 137 or something like that. What was his quarterback rating? 132.4, 137 versus Chicago. He's
Goff's been great. There's no
it's
questions
yeah,
about it.
he's been sensational. And so, he made a mistake on trying to escape out the back on one of Bosa's sacks. And so like there
But that
are
was it. That was the only bad play he made in the game.
I know.
It's
It's
like
crazy.
it's really been something. He's being undersold right now, because even as I pointed, like I brought up, the offensive line hasn't played great games in the last few games, but it doesn't matter. He's been even better. I
It's
shouldn't
his
say it's bizarre. I mean, he's probably playing the best he has in his whole career.
I agree. I think it's the best he's played as a line. Like the last month that he's had, he's just been terrific. And confidence is there, understanding of scheme is there, ability to execute is there, accuracy is. It's just thing after thing after thing makes him such a weapon. Defenses still have no answer for Jahmyr Gibbs in this offense. It's tough to match JMO's speed and Amon-Ra in the slot. Now Sam Laporta has all of a sudden introduced himself back into the realm of things. Through weeks 1 through 9, he was getting less than 15% of the target share. Now in weeks 10 through 17, he's up to 22% of the target share. So you're seeing a lot more volume from him, a lot more touchdowns. Now it's what makes them such a dynamic team. And you add Khalif Raymond back into the mix potentially this week. Now you have another speed option that you can threaten them with. You've got reliability in Tim Patrick, who comes up and gets him the 2-point conversion. Even Allen Robinson gets in on the mix. And that veteran that has been hanging around the team all year, all year, all year. You need him on third down to get you 21 yards. Like there's not a lot of chinks in the armor on the offensive side of the ball. And like you said, it's nitpicking to try and pick three, four, five plays that didn't work quite right because the other 50, 60 plays that they are running, they're executing them and they're scoring points at a high volume.
Worth noting, you should get a little credit for how he played against San Francisco. Craig Reynolds touched the ball 9 times for 66 yards.
That's awesome. He played great. I was very impressed with his ability to get the ball and get upfield in a hurry. Like he didn't try and dance. He wasn't trying to like do anything fancy. It was get the ball, go. And that's perfect. That's exactly what you want to see out of him. And so they used the other reserves less and used Craig a little bit more because he was contributing. And I really liked what I saw from Craig for sure.
Were you worried during this game at all?
I was worried if they were going to get a stop because I wasn't worried about the offense. Like I knew inevitably San Francisco was going to, they were going to make mistakes. Like they were playing above their heads from what I had seen on tape. So my concern was, when will San Francisco's offense break? And when it does, will the Lions have enough time to make sure that they can then take the lead and go over? And once they came out of the second half, it didn't take long for them to do that. And then once they did that, I felt pretty confident that they weren't going to give the lead back. So first half was a little bit worrisome, just because I didn't know when that transition was going to happen.
Did you worry at all that Ricky Pearsall would have 300 yards receiving by the end of the game?
No, again, it's they ran a lot of routes that are man coverage beaters, crossers, pick plays.
Sure, yeah.
And they were executing them very well. I knew that they would probably run out of steam at some point. And that's kind of what happened. They stopped running the ball in the second half. Like, they only ran the ball like two or three times, maybe four times max in the second half. And that, I think, really was a detriment to what they were trying to accomplish. Because when they were balanced, they kept the Lions honest. And when they went away from the run and just started passing more, Lions were able to sink back a little bit more in coverage. And then that's what created the opportunities for Kirby.
All right. I didn't get too worried. I felt if they fell behind two scores, mm-hmm. you know, luckily they held it at eight. You know, it's like, oh, they're going to be in it, you know, until the end, it seems. And then once they took the lead, once we saw 40-28, felt pretty comfortable. Like, oh, that's going to be it. They're going to win this one. All right. Yep. We should move on from this game. Any other notes?
No, I think we should. I want to talk about the Pro Bowl because they announced those rosters today, and I know that there's a little bit of controversy over the Pro Bowl announcements.
Boy. But there shouldn't be.
Well, let's go over why or how it's decided. The fans they vote on it through the NFL website, and the fan vote counts for a third. Then you have coaches vote on Pro Bowl nominations, and that counts for a third. And then players vote as well, and that counts for a third. And there's rules for coaches and players on who they can vote for and who they can't, et cetera. But Lions end up with 19 Pro Bowlers in the fan vote, and then that, of course, gets scaled back. As you know, everybody else gets involved with the
Lions
fans, the other two-thirds
stuffing the ballot boxes.
It sure seems like they have drawn a lot of attention. And keep in mind, Lions fan base has grown pretty exponentially into other markets and stuff like that as the Lions have become more successful. Dan Campbell, their personalities, et cetera, Lions fan base has grown. So they end up with seven players named to the Pro Bowl. That's the second most amongst the NFL teams. Ravens had nine, and then they end up with a bunch of alternates. Let me see, let's count them real fast. 11. Yeah, 11 alternates. And then a couple people that got, you know, you could argue were snubbed. One I definitely would like to argue is snubbed. And then they had a couple of guys who probably would have made the team had they been eligible. For example, Aiden Hutchinson wasn't eligible because he didn't play enough games. He got injured before the allotment. Jameson Williams was not eligible because Jameson Williams was suspended. Therefore, he is not eligible. So Aiden and Jameson not eligible, or maybe they might have been alternates as well. Or, you know,
Aiden probably would have been a starter.
If he doesn't get hurt,
if he played the whole season.
Yeah, certainly. Let's go through the list. Surprise, not a surprise, etc.
All right.
let's talk about it.
Quarterback Jared Goff's fourth appearance as a Pro Bowler, not a surprise at all. Excellent season. Not the deepest quarterback room in the NFC this season.
Yeah. All right. No surprise. He's playing great, right?
Jahmyr Gibbs. Not a surprise at all, as less rushing yards than Saquon Barkley, but certainly a dominant back in the NFC.
Yep. Again, no surprise, right?
Amon-Ra St. Brown, third appearance as a Pro Bowler, this time as a starter. Not a surprise at all. He is, what, fourth in the NFL in receiving yardage. Like, not a surprise at all.
Well, let's not forget that he was not in the Pro Bowl last year until he got named in as an alternate. even though he was an all pro. So
no, that, but that's that, good that, for good for us as Lions fans, because it puts a larger chip on his shoulder.
Exactly.
Anything to snub him more. He's a great player. I'm not saying I don't like him. I like him very much. But any way we could keep him angry and productive is good. All right. Penei Sewell, third year.
Yep.
The third time Pro Bowler, also as a starter, not a surprise there. Probably if not the best, one of the two or three best offensive tackles in the NFL.
What's very interesting about the NFC starting tackles is that they're both right tackles. Lane Johnson is the other offensive tackle.
Slide so. Sewell over to the left side, but they're not even playing a game anyway. It doesn't even matter anymore.
No, I just find it fascinating with such an emphasis put on left tackles that the two best NFC tackles are both right play on the right side.
Bookending the ages too. Lane Johnson's an old man, where Sewell is still rather young. Frank Ragnow, another starter, his fourth time as a Pro Bowler. You know, it's hard for me to say no for any of these guys, because you know, I support the Lions, but I'm slightly surprised.
I'm not. He's got a history. He's had some games.
He's a name
where he's been completely dominant as well. I know there's some up and coming centers. Most of the younger ones that people pay attention to are in the AFC as well. So Frank is, in my opinion, Frank is better than some of the other NFC potential challengers.
Brian Branch, safety, first time starter, first time Pro Bowler. I don't know, not a surprise. He probably deserved it more last year than this year, but it's hard to say he doesn't deserve it this year.
Yeah, he's really just been sensational. Big games, big plays, pass breakups. He's off the charts. He's got a bunch of interceptions, bunch of tackle for losses. His ability to do everything makes him such a it makes it so warranted.
Jack Fox, punter, second time. I don't know. Like, he doesn't punt enough.
No, but he throws. Like he's converted some fourth down conversions, right? He's thrown a couple. He's been really consistent as a holder. Remember, he has a rookie long snapper and a technically first year kicker, and those guys are both brand new to the league this year, and he's got to maintain that room. It's a big ask, and his average is near the top.
Second
as well.
In gross average at 51 yards even. His returns, which is kind of on him, but mostly on his coverage unit. Although if he has good hang time and good directional kicking, it certainly helps. 6.5 yards per return, so excellent net. Let's see if that, I would guess, making that his number one in net punting average, 46.3. He didn't have a single one blocked. He only had four touchbacks.
Yeah, that's a big one.
43 punts, though, puts him down at number 29 in the NFL. Just not a ton of usage. The Bohorquez from Cleveland, 84 punts, nearly twice as many punts as Jack Fox. But I know that doesn't necessarily make him a Pro Bowler. The 51 yards per kick does, but fine. I won't argue. He's second overall behind Ryan Stonehouse, the Tennessee punter, in another conference. Mm-hmm. Number three, A.J. Cole, Las Vegas, in the other conference. Bryce Behringer, New England. You got to go down to number nine, Michael Dixon from Seattle, where you have a fellow in the NFC in the top 10 in average per punt. So, all right, I'm in.
There you go. Fox.
All right, alternate group, David Montgomery. Montgomery, he's the third alternate. Tight end Sam Laporta, first alternate tight end. Guard Kevin Zeitler, third alternate. Graham Glasgow is a fourth alternate. Left tackle Taylor Decker, a third alternate. Aleem McNeil, a third alternate. Defensive tackle DJ Reader, a seventh alternate. That's going pretty far down the list. Linebacker Jack Campbell, a fourth alternate. Kirby Joseph, a second alternate. Khalif Raymond, first alternate as a kick returner.
Correct.
Jake Bates, second alternate as a kicker. So obviously Kirby Joseph's the biggest snub on this list.
Yeah. You know, leads the league in interceptions. He's two more than everybody else. His coverage rate is, I believe, the best in the NFL amongst the safeties, and it might even be the best amongst all DBs. He's not allowing much to be completed against him in coverage in any capacity. There have been more and more people coming out and saying, is Kirby Joseph a candidate for defensive player of the year? We've heard it from PFF. We've heard it from ESPN, a couple people at ESPN, and then a few other national audiences as well, or national commentators as well, they've all come out and said, man, Kirby is with the defensive player of the year wide open and no clear front runner. Should the guy who has 9 interceptions and you can't throw in his area, should he be in contention for it? And the answer is yes, he should be in consideration. Should he win it? I don't know. We'll see. But like, he should definitely be in contention with it. And if you're in contention for NFC or for defensive player of the year, you should certainly be a Pro Bowler as well, I would think. So he was first amongst all safeties in the fan vote, yet ends up at second alternate. So that means he was fourth when things were all said and done at his position.
NFC safeties for the Pro Bowl: Xavier McKinney from the Green Bay Packers, mm-hmm. Buda Baker from the Arizona Cardinals, and the third safety is Brian Branch from the Lions.
Yep. So, so three safeties, so that means Kirby would have been fifth, I guess, right? So, either way, I think you could easily make a case for him being amongst those top three, even potentially ahead of Brian Branch, which is, a bit hard for me to say because Branch is so dynamic. But Kirby has been sensational this year. And the reason this is a big deal is because Kirby's still on his rookie contract and he's going into the final year of his rookie contract. So in the final year of his rookie contract, he makes like $1.3 million or something like that. If he would have got the Pro Bowl nod, he would have made upwards of like $5 million or like $4.5 million. He would have got like a $3 million raise by making the Pro Bowl. Yeah, right? So he would have had.
Well, what happens if he gets, so like, say people back out and he ends mm-hmm. up getting named? Does he get that bump or no?
No, you have to be a first ballot mm-hmm. Pro Bowler. And so if you recall, we've seen this happen with guys that end up in the final year of their rookie deals, because that's when these incentives come into play. When you're in it happened with Sewell. Like, Sewell had made two Pro Bowls, and so he bumped up a couple of spots. But one of those Pro Bowls that he made was as an alternate, so he only bumped up one spot instead of two, and so that was a difference of a few million dollars. And so Kirby loses quite a bit of money for this. And, the interesting thing is when Aaron Glenn was asked about his thoughts on Kirby not making it, Aaron Glenn said he believed Kirby was a Pro Bowler. And when they asked why they thought he didn't get it, he basically was like, you guys know why, and then left it at that. So, Kirby has a label. Kirby hit properly and happened to catch guys' knees the wrong way. And a couple guys ended up missing almost a full year of football because of hits that Kirby laid on them. But I don't think Kirby, the league doesn't believe Kirby did anything wrong. He was never flagged, nor fined, nor suspended. He did things the right way, yet he gets a label because a player got hurt. Two players got hurt. And so with that label, there's a bit of maybe implied discrimination against him because of his play. And I think that's pretty sad.
Other snubs you have listed here, I wouldn't agree with them. Alex Anzalone, Carlton mm-hmm. Davis, they were both injured. I guess you could make a case Davis only missed a couple of games so far. But
yeah, I was just curious if you had any thoughts, because like Davis was the number one corner for like a month there. Yeah. He was playing at a high, high level and before he got injured. So he was playing as good as anybody. And then Anzalone, same thing. The first half of his season, he was arguably the best linebacker in football, like at one point it felt like. And Jack Fox's, or I'm sorry, Jack Campbell's up there, and that's why he ends up being an alternate. But Anzalone was such a vital piece of what they do. I thought they were a couple of names that deserve to be discussed a little bit.
All right, moving on to the transactions coming up this week. First, waived wide receiver Tom Kennedy. So note to Tom, don't go too far. That's just me. It's
100%.
also waived safety Maurice Norris.
Yes. So Kennedy and Norris free up two spots on the active roster. And the Lions happen to have two players on injured reserve that are practicing, and they happen to have two regular season spots available to return two players from injured reserve. So it certainly seems like, based on the tea leaves, the Lions have cleared two spots. They have two players practicing. It sure looks like they will return Khalif Raymond and Alex Anzalone this week. It's not 100% for certain, but they've been making these moves days in advance. It's usually a precursor to them making room for the return guys from IR. So whether or not that means Alex or Khalif play in week 18, I think is maybe still debatable, but I expect both of them to be activated to the active roster. And then that'll be the last two spots they can use during the regular season. And then they will get to the playoffs and they'll get the opportunity to return two more players from IR if they have players that are capable and ready. And of those, there's a couple of guys that kind of fit that bill. Carlton Davis maybe being a question mark, Ennis Rakestraw being a question mark. And then, of course, everyone wants Aiden Hutchinson to return for the Super Bowl. So we got to keep mentioning that as well. But yeah, Kennedy will likely end up on the practice squad. Maurice Norris is already on the practice squad because they released safety Jamal Adams. Jamal Adams became expendable once Ifeanyi Melifonwu came back. So they basically were doing the same. They play the same spot. So now that Ife's back, Adams gets released, then Norris takes his spot on the practice squad. They will most likely make when Tom Kennedy clears waivers, they'll make another move and then re-sign Tom Kennedy to the practice squad. Note the fact that they released him on a Thursday means that he can clear waivers in time to be re-added. If they would have waited until Friday, he would be on waivers until Tuesday.
All right, you basically covered all the transactions there, the release of Jamal Adams and then the evaluation clock for Anzalone. So you've already talked about that injury report. Running back David Montgomery, knee injury, did not practice Wednesday and Thursday. No surprise there. Wide receiver Khalif Raymond with his hamstring injury, full practice Wednesday and Thursday. You point out he's still on injured reserve, may return this week.
Yeah, expect him to return this week, right? And I expect him to return this week. He's now had five full practices, and he'll probably get a sixth in on Friday, and then it'd be listed as questionable. And then on Saturday, he'll probably be activated to one of the vacated spots.
Offensive guard Christian Mahogany, illness, not on the Wednesday injury report. Added Thursday as it did not practice.
Yeah, so illnesses are weird because they can be anything, non-like physically related. So you could have a bug, which is very common this time of year. So you could get like just a flu and you got to miss a day or two. And then, or it could be something more serious, like Christian Mahogany had mono and was out for 4 months. You know what I mean? So illness falls into both categories. You could be it could be 24 hours or a year. You know what I mean? Like it's hard to tell, and because of the HIPAA laws and stuff, like they can't really come out and say, oh yeah, he's dealing with a whatever. If it's like something he's already returning from, they can be like, oh yeah, he had a cold. You know what I mean? But like with the mono thing, they never really acknowledged that. He was the one that eventually acknowledged it when he returned. So Typically, this time of year, illnesses are common. Typically, they last 24 to 48 hours. But like I said, the illness category leaves a lot of lot open to speculation.
Now, never suffering from it myself, nor anyone close to me that I know of.
Yeah.
Can mono come back? I don't think it can, right? I mean, I guess it can.
Oh, I think it can, but I don't know if there's like a window where you become like immune to it for a while. I'm going to be honest. I don't really know.
Not a medical podcast. No. Probably sound a certain level of dumb, but yeah, I don't know.
Certainly. Yeah. I would think you would become susceptible to it. Like I had
rickets. No, I was just trying to guess what you had.
No, pneumonia. I had pneumonia.
Yeah, and that would make you susceptible to pneumonia.
And the doctor says, yeah, you can have it again now. And so I have to be very diligent in making sure that I don't get that. But so I don't know. It could be like that. I'm sure we have a lot of doctors who listen to us. So I'm sure
it's very high class group of podcast listeners we have.
I 100% expect someone to be able to let us know.
Explain this to us. Yeah, no, I'd appreciate it. All right. At linebacker, Alex Anzalone. I don't even know. We probably really don't have to talk about this at all. This is all everybody's talking about. Forearm injury, limited Wednesday, full practice Thursday, still on IR. May return this week. I wouldn't be shocked if he didn't play, though.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. Like, his conversation with the media today was, I'm talking to the medical staff about what my risks are. I'm trying to figure out, am I more susceptible to an injury? If I come back now, well, am I more at risk to hurt myself to the point where I couldn't play, like in the Super Bowl? Or if I wait a week or two, am I now going to be more assurance that I would be available if we get there? And so it's a tough decision. I know he's competitive and I know he certainly wants to be out there, and he has a removable brace that he's wearing on his arm for protective reasons.
Oh, it's not just taping magazines on there. It's a removable brace.
Yes. It's you know, nothing permanent or anything, but it's there's protective gear to help him. But you know, I think him returning this week has kind of been the plan all along. When I talked to my source about medical stuff, like, I was told that this was the realistic return date. And then I know that I'm not alone in that, because I've heard there's been other reports from the beat that have echoed a similar timeline, that this was kind of the target date. Now, if he's able to go, awesome. It'll be a huge benefit. If he's not, they'll find a way to work without him. And it's still a winnable game. But getting him back, whenever that is, will be a massive, massive upgrade for the defense.
Linebacker Jack Campbell, rib injury, limited Wednesday, full practice Thursday.
He played every snap. And the limited was, they did a walkthrough on Wednesday. So, like, that was just an estimated limited. Fact that he's practicing in full, good sign he's good to go.
Cornerback Amik Robertson, calf injury, limited Wednesday, full practice Thursday.
Just copy paste what I just said. He should be good to go as well.
He's been talking about Justin Jefferson. They used to play against each other in high school at the LSU camps, all sorts of things. He's excited to play against him again. All right.
He's a tenacious defender.
Cornerback Emmanuel Mosley, illness, did not practice Wednesday or Thursday.
What's interesting about Mosley is that he did not play a single snap in the game, not on defense or special teams. So I do wonder if there might have been like something that came up that during the game where he wasn't able to go, or maybe he was just being, you know, just phased out that particular week. But it's very weird to have him active and then not play him, and then he's now sick for 2 days, and you wonder if there's maybe he's something else, like, you know, you could have any type of sickness that can knock you out for a handful of days. Like that's not unusual. I just talked about pneumonia. Pneumonia can knock you out for a week, right? Like it or longer, right? So, all kinds of things that could be in play here. But what we don't know where he's at. We don't know what his status is, and we don't know what his availability will be until we're told.
There is no event. I don't know.
Right.
We're for some reason, and because he had a great career before he got to Detroit, but there's a certain point where it's like, if Emmanuel Mosley plays great, but he really doesn't play for this team, and he really hasn't played for this team ever since he came here. But he is this name that we always kind of float out. Maybe
Sure.
Emmanuel Mosley could step up and help, but.
Yeah, if he's unable to play, nothing changes.
Right.
Unfortunately, that's where we're at.
Right. That's it for the injuries. That's it for the transactions. Now on for the big one. Lions favored by 2.5. The game's going to be at Ford Field. The game has been flexed to Sunday Night Football. So was that 8:10, 8:12, 8:20 p.m.
20. Yeah.
All
Oh,
right. Yeah.
20. It's 8:20.
On NBC and Peacock, we've got the local crew, well, not local crew, just the local Mike Tirico, who could sleep in his own bed. Leading up to the game with Chris Collinsworth and Melissa Stark down on the field. The referees, Brad Rogers, is eighth year in the NFL, sixth as a referee, 13.8 flags per game, which is 0.8 above average.
So when they released that it was Brad Rogers, I thought it said, I read it as Brad Allen, and my heart skipped a beat a time or two because I was like, they haven't had Brad Allen ref since the debacle in Dallas. Like they're not going to put him. And then I thought they had scheduled Brad Allen for his first game to be this one, and I about passed out. Brad Rogers is much different. So I'm very happy it's Brad Rogers and not Brad Allen, because if it was Brad Allen, I would be awfully, 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 awfully upset.
Have you guys over there, Pride of Detroit, been tracking certain officials
No, not
officiating
really.
against Lions game? That would be a
He
good one.
reffed the Arizona game, I believe, with the
Okay.
Lions.
Well, that was in the Lions' favor. All right, black uniforms, at least that's what they're teasing. Kind of odd that they don't
It's,
they have a
yeah.
loss with the black uniforms.
So the timeline that I'm aware of is that the way the uniform scheduling works is ahead of, once the schedule is made, the teams submit the top jersey, like what color jersey they're going to wear for every home game for the upcoming season. They have to submit that ahead of time. The opponent then
Have these people have ever heard of superstition? Like
no, but
this could change on a whim.
so then the opponent then schedules their opposite color,
Yeah,
and they know what they're
they
going to
need to
wear.
coordinate.
And then each week it's up to the captains to accessorize that uniform that has been pre-designated. But for whatever reason, following the Thanksgiving Day game, or maybe the week after, the Lions decided that they wanted to change from their pre-scheduled Week 18 throwbacks, which is what it was supposed to be, and they decided they wanted to change to the black. So that move or that decision was made before the loss in Buffalo, and that had to have been made in enough time, in advance enough for the Vikings to adapt their uniforms as well. And so I believe they're going to wear their whites. So it's going to be all black versus all white. It's going to be like hero and villain,
Oh
hero and
boy,
villain
there we
style
go.
stuff, right?
Yep.
I mean, it just, the storyline writes itself there. But the Lions decided to make that move before the loss. So this was kind of set in motion like six weeks ago, or maybe even early prior to that. So little bit of confusion. I know that this is the timeline as I understand it.
Undefeated in the quote unquote blueberry look with the blue pants. They have the loss against the Buccaneers in the silver pants. They're 1-1 in the black uniforms, win over the Seahawks, and then the loss to Buffalo. I don't know. I you know me and curses, so it's like they're asking for it.
Would you have been happier if they were wearing the throwbacks?
Well, that's my favorite uniform, so yeah, I guess you could say. I know we don't make a big deal about the uniforms on the show, but that's my favorite look of all time is the throwback uniforms.
But those have not historically been
right. They've been bad as well.
Either. Yeah.
Yeah, but the first time they wore it was the Monday night in Dallas. You know, Barry, they go into overtime. The Jason Hansen kick beats them to 20-17. That would have, you know, maybe they can conjure up those memories. But you're right. There's been a lot of bad Thanksgiving losses in those uniforms.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, maybe it would have been just as big of a curse. It's all on me here. All right. Maybe, and they could be trying to force these black uniforms to, like, have a more special meaning. They want to keep them around.
I tell you, the players love them. Yeah, players love them. Fans really enjoy them. They look really great up close. A lot harder to identify numbers at a distance, which I've talked about before. But
yeah, but because of the TV. Well, yeah, we're old, and yeah, when you're sit far enough away at the stadium, but on the TV,
but for the TV audience, so yeah, the TV audience is going to get it. You don't notice it at all. Like it's a great viewing. It's a great jersey for the viewing experience, right? On television, in person, it's harder to identify. But you know, I think the Lions are unique enough. Like their players are unique enough that you can, if you've been paying attention, you can tell some of these guys just by the way they move or their body types and stuff like that. So it's that's basically what I rely on now. I'm like, oh, that guy's running a 4-1. That must be JMO, right?
Yeah. And the look is better than the old Matt Millen Raiders Lions uniforms, where they basically looked like the Raiders with a little Honolulu boot blue trim here and there. So, all right. So that's what we're looking at on Sunday. Vikings coming in at 14-2. They've won 9 in a row now. Their only losses are to our beloved Lions. That 31-29 loss back at the old the Viking ship, U.S. Bank Stadium or whatever bank. I screwed that up last time. stadium in Minneapolis, Lions fell behind early 10-0 and rallied for the win. Might not be that easy this time. They need to come out strong. Rams game, it's interesting that, like, the Lions, you know, like, they have their trip up against potential NFC South champion Buccaneers, and the Vikings have their own against the Rams. Both of these teams are, like, 10-win teams, you know. But they're still playoff-caliber teams. Still got to lose to somebody. It's very rare. It's never happened where somebody's gone 17-0. So I guess both of them lose it to a pair of playoff teams apiece. Not a big surprise.
The Rams game was the game immediately following the Lions game, so there was a bit of a Lions hangover. It was also on a short week, so they had to play on a Thursday night that week. And even though the Rams were really, really shorthanded, they just had some magic going that night, and the Vikings looked shell shocked a little bit. And so good old Matthew Stafford gave us another big win. Yeah.
Is the Lions hangover, is that still real? Did we stop following this? It stopped
after the Titans game, because the Titans played somebody terrible and or something, like right around that time, where it was like somebody was going to play at a really bad team and beat them, and so that's kind of when everyone stopped following.
All right. DVOA rankings, Lions overall number 2, Vikings overall number 7, surprisingly. Lions offense is 3rd overall, 6th throwing the ball, 2nd running the ball. Vikings defense number 3 overall, 1st against the pass, and number 3 against the run. Conversely, the Lions defense sitting at number 7, 5th against the pass, 10th against the run. The Viking offense is 14th, 5th throwing the ball, and 20th running the ball.
9th throwing the ball, or 9th throwing the ball is I had to double check just my own notes to be sure. Just because I was a bit surprised that they were in the top 10, but they've had some good run of late, and so it's really kind of popped that number. It's interesting to look because, like, obviously the Lions' defense is not playing at the level that they are ranked for the season from a DVOA standpoint, right? Like, they're much more middle of the pack. But the same can be said for Minnesota. Minnesota has kind of scaled back their defense of late. They're not quite as efficient as they were earlier in the season. They're not as efficient as they were the last time they played the Lions. They're still a problem. They're still executing well. And, you could even argue that the Vikings offense is maybe playing a little better than their rankings as well. So it's tough when you're looking at the season totality of these numbers as opposed to just like how they've been doing over the last month. But these teams are pretty much what they are, and they are pretty much what they were. Like, there's some stats that, have changed, but they've changed across the league. For example, what was the I was trying to I had a good one. They're 2-3 in some in one of the rush oh yeah. So in giving up run yards, the Vikings give up the second fewest run yards in the NFL at 88.1. Lions give up 97. That's the third fewest. The Ravens are at like 85. They're the number one team. But if you go back to week 7, they were actually still in the same order. Ravens were number one, Vikings were number two, Lions were number three, but all of them were averaging like 30 yards less than what they're averaging now, right? Like, the Vikings were averaging like 65 yards allowed. Now it's 88. But, like, so it's interesting how you've seen them shed more yards in a statistic like this, yet it's they're in the that's the, they're in the exact same order of the top three. And you see this in a lot of categories where it's like, oh, look, the Vikings are a little bit worse. Oh, look, the Lions are a little bit worse. Oh, but they're still ranked exactly the same. Turnover margin is another one of these things. In turnover margin, I believe the Vikings were seventh or sixth the last time they faced the Lions. Lions were fourth. Now here we are again. Lions are still fourth. Vikings are six or seven again, and but both of them are creating fewer turnovers than they did back in week 7. So while you, if you look at if you're looking at these if you're looking at a lot of the numbers and you're looking for like, oh, how is this, how are these teams changing, or what are the weaknesses, or how are they getting worse, it's surprising that there are some noticeable changes in like the actual statistics. But the rankings are all they're in about the same spot that they've always been, where it's just a the league is progressively all getting worse or all getting better in these certain areas. It's kind of it's very fascinating to me when I started breaking the numbers down a little bit closer this week.
All right. Kevin O'Connell's the head coach. He's the front runner for coach of the year for some reason. I mean, I guess
Well,
he, they're better than they should be. I don't know. At the same time, Campbell's navigated 22 guys on injured reserve, 23 guys at one point on injured reserve. Jim Harbaugh took over a mess in Los Angeles and rallied them to a playoffs and what is that, 11 wins. Like, I don't know why it's so easy for Kevin O'Connell to win this Coach of the Year award.
It's because the expectations for their wins were 6.5. They were supposed to win 6.5 wins. They won 14. The coach of the year is not based on who the best coach is. Coach of the year is based on who did
Who
we
did the
think?
best job with what they
Well,
got?
that's what they think, right? Like, they're like, but it's really just about who did we underestimate? And then all of a sudden they're doing well. And then, like, Brian Daboll won Coach of the Year 2 years ago.
Kevin
Stefanski,
Stefanski won it
right, last
twice.
week. Right. And it's all because we have these preconceived notions of how terrible these teams are supposed to be. And then when they do better than terrible, we're like, oh man, What a great coaching job to do to get 8 wins with such a terrible team. The Vikings were expected to be bad or average, and they're not. They're better than that. Well, maybe they were always better than that, but we just didn't give them the credit that they were deserved. And so that gets him coach of the year. I hate it. I hate the system. I hate how it gets voted on. It's ridiculous, and I don't like it. So I don't want to get too on my soapbox about this whole thing,
No, I think you do.
but I feel like I'm already there. It's a bit malarkey, in my opinion.
What are you more disappointed in, Kirby Joseph not making the Pro Bowl, or the fact that Kevin O'Connell will win Coach of the Year? We don't know for sure, but I'm just going to say it. So.
I think from a human standpoint, you're more disappointed for Kirby because that's a lot of money that he's going to
Sure.
lose. I mean, he'll make it up, right? It's in one way or another with his next contract, I'm sure. But I'm most offended by Kevin O'Connell winning Coach of the Year.
Wes
If he
Phillips
does.
is his
Go ahead.
offensive coordinator. But as we've been told, it's all the brainchild of Kevin O'Connell. One thing I want to point out about O'Connell, and this
Yes.
has nothing to do with anything that we're talking about this upcoming game. When Tom Brady talked about Kevin O'Connell's a former New England Patriot, a
Yeah, third
backup
round pick.
quarterback under
Yeah.
Brady, do you notice how Brady didn't really have anything nice to say about him? Because, and you know, like in my head, it goes right, not because it's because, like, when he showed up at Patriots practice, Tom Brady had to dominate him and make him feel like he was the worst quarterback to ever. You know, he kind of had icy relationships with most of his
Sure.
reserve quarterback, except for Brian
Sure.
Hoyer for some reason. But,
Yeah,
like, the
well,
rest of them, you know, like they were.
Michigan State connection
I
there.
mean, you would think he'd hate him more, but he was the guy he liked studying with, or for whatever reason. But like Garoppolo, like he hated Garoppolo, he wanted him gone. You know, I would assume Kevin O'Connell's the same thing. It seemed like most of them were like that.
Maybe he thought Garoppolo was better looking. And he's you know, a
Well, it's a
little
close one.
got a jealous hint, twinge in his,
I don't know,
I
but it
don't know.
wasn't only that. I kind of had a feel like he didn't, you know, like he just stated facts about Kevin O'Connell, basically. Not that, like,
Yes.
oh, great guy. It was awesome playing with him, because it probably wasn't. He probably was a total jerk to him. You know, Brady to O'Connell. You
Yeah.
know, he doesn't want any, because he knows where he came from, and he didn't want anybody to usurp his position, even though nobody was going to.
Yeah, I do think there's
Except for his personal life, but that's another story.
I do think that Brady has a bit of, if I played with you, I hold you to a different level
Ooh,
than someone I
yes.
haven't played with. Because like if he's just meeting someone for the first time, he's gonna be like, oh yeah, I met this guy, he's cool, it's fun. Because I'm meeting him as media Tom Brady,
Right.
as opposed to, like you were saying, meeting him as I'm winning Super Bowl Tom Brady, which is more higher expectations, more demanding. And if you didn't, you could be like the nicest guy and you could meet Tom Brady, but then you make mistakes and all of a sudden Tom Brady now hates you because you made mistakes, even though you're a super nice guy. Whereas if you, that same nice guy were to have met him in media Tom Brady would probably gush over him. So I'm sure, but I'm sure
Fair
there's
assessment.
so but yeah, this is O'Connell's offense. This is
Yeah, he's the caretaker.
yeah, comes from the Shanahan scheme one way or another, right? Like he's been with he coached with the Shan with Shanahan's and McVay, and they were all, that whole big group of guys.
All right. We want to go position by position. I know we don't normally do that with the when we're playing a team for a second time, but
It's up to you. We can attack it however you want.
all right. Last time that these two teams played, Sam Darnold, we're going to see him once again. He's starting quarterback, went 22 of 27, 259 yards, one touchdown, one interception, sacked 4 times, rating 103.5. Stats will probably be very similar this Sunday. A lot of completions. You know, just a handful of incompletions, hopefully another interception, likely will not be sacked 4 times. Lucky if we get one.
Yeah. And he's coming off his best game of his career, where he went 33 of 43 for 377 and three touchdowns against the Packers.
Very clean.
But the Packers, they rushed three and dropped eight quite a bit. And then they played zone. And it's basically the opposite of what Detroit is going to do against him. Detroit is going to play. They're going to stack the box. They're going to try and stop the run. They're going to blitz you. They blitz 42.9% of the time, I believe, since Hutchinson went down. And the Vikings blitz like 40% of the time. So both teams are going to be blitzing like crazy. But it's going to be a much different approach for Sam Darnold this week as opposed to what he was able to do last week. Because last week he just kind of sat there and he just found the zone, hit the zone, and he made some good throws. And he made some nice deep throws that he doesn't always make. And he's coming off a great game. So his confidence is high. But against man coverage, it's a different animal. Against, five-man fronts or blitzing, it's a different animal. He does pretty good with that. But he's also got two picks in the last three games. And so it's not unusual for him to make an errant pass or two. So I expect his stat line to be, like you said, high. Expect him to throw a lot and get some completions. But it also wouldn't be surprising if he turned the ball over.
Darnold also had 39 yards rushing on four carries. He's a danger slightly on the ground once he does get scrambling to take off and go. Running back-wise, Aaron Jones rushed for 93 yards and a touchdown. Last time these two teams played, also caught three passes out of the backfield for 23 yards, all three of his targets. Reserves, Ty Chandler, Cam Akers. Akers was around the first time around, but I don't think he played. I think they had just they just brought him into the fold at that time.
Yeah. Jones had that one big play right off the bat.
34-yard run right from the get-go.
Right. And so then the rest of the time it was 13 carries for 60 yards. So they were able to bottle him up a little bit more after that big run, but that's part of what Aaron Jones brings to the table. My biggest concern with Aaron Jones is that he is a terrific pass catching back, and the MO that both the 49ers and Buffalo Bills did against the Lions was play action, throw to the running back. And the linebackers weren't able to hold up. Both of them did the exact, not the exact, but a similar type game plan. And the Vikings have the talent to do so. They run play action, I think the eighth most in the NFL. Let me see if I can find the number real fast. Yeah, they run it about 27% of the time. So like once every first down or so. Every four snaps, they're going to run play action. And Aaron Jones is a terrific pass catcher. Cam Akers is a pretty good pass catcher as well. But Aaron Jones is a treat. Now, Aaron Jones is limited, and he's been limited all week because he hurt his quad in the game last week against the Packers. But he's insisting that he's going to play. But he is the guy that I'm the most worried about. I know Sam Darnold is a guy that is coming, like I said, coming off his best game, and people are scared of this team's ability to defend the pass. But I think Aaron Jones is going to be the guy that the Lions have to account for the most if they want to stunt this offense's ability to move down the field. So Aaron Jones is the guy to watch out for, not just as a runner, but in the passing game, I think there's an opportunity for him to take advantage.
Wide receiver group, Justin Jefferson, Jordan Addison, Jalen Naylor, reserves, Trent Sherfield Sr., Brandon Powell, all three of those guys, Jefferson, Addison, and Naylor, had good games against the Packers. They are a frightening group against this Lions defense.
Yeah, they'll run like cloud coverage with Jefferson as they've done in the past. Addison is a guy that is going to talk a lot, and we'll see how well he holds up. Last time, I think he had like 66 yards or something like that. And that's pretty close to his average, if I'm not mistaken. He's had a touchdown catch in three of the last four Vikings games. So he's been a guy that Sam Darnold has turned to when Jefferson has been covered. And so, you know, they'll still force the ball into Jefferson like we've seen in the past, but it's all part of it. Naylor is a guy who I think the Lions are going to have to pay closer attention to because of the style of defense that they're running now with Brian Branch in the slot. You're either going to have to ask like Kirby to play him, or you're going to have, I don't know. I mean, are you going to have Brian Branch run with them? Or are you going to play more defensive backs and maybe get Iffy on the field and maybe have Iffy? Like, how they defend Naylor is going to be interesting. He only plays like half the snap. So they only run like 11 personnel, like half the game, like 55 or something like that percent of the time. So you're only going to see Naylor on about half the snaps. So, but when those half happen, you know, he's a guy that could be a sneaky contributor for them.
Tight end TJ Hockenson didn't play the first time around against the Lions. Also have Josh Oliver and Johnny Munt.
Yeah, Hockenson's been getting more and more reps, more and more. He's more of Darnold's outlet on got to have it downs. And so, again, a guy that is probably going to match up with Kirby a handful of times, which is good for the Lions. But at this stage, the way that they're running their offense, Hockenson isn't necessarily a primary target. He's just more of a reliable target that they'll utilize when they need it. And so he's not as big of a threat, but he's still always a threat because he's a very talented tight end.
Offensive line. Oh, wait. Fullback, CJ Ham.
Yeah, he's he plays like, what, 20% or something like that of the snaps, maybe a little bit less sometimes. He is not like Juszczyk last week. Like, Juszczyk is a different animal. Ham's not going to be like that. He's more of like a power runner. And I actually think the way that the Lions run defense, they will match up better against a more traditional fullback as opposed to the what we saw with Juszczyk last week. So still, when you add a fullback in, it gives you the ability to run the ball downhill a little bit more. And the line, it basically means you're going to see the Lions in base, certainly on the plays when Ham is on the field.
Offensive line left to right. Cam Robinson, Blake Brandel, Garrett Bradbury, Dalton Risner, and Brian O'Neill.
So Robinson is their left tackle. Last time they played, Darisaw was the left tackle, and then but he's on IR. His season is over. Robinson is not at the same talent level as Darisaw, but he's an average starter, and you know he'll do okay. And with the Lions, if they blitz on his side, like let's say you blitz Brian Branch with Pascal as the kind of five technique guy, Pascal can tie him up and Branch can come free, kind of like what we saw last week against San Francisco. So you can do things to him that you might have had a harder time against Darisaw, but, you know, he's average, but at the same time, the Lions' defensive line is kind of average as well. And I think the same is true with the interior.
You can throw any five out there against that Lions front.
Yeah, really.
Like the 49ers did.
You know, I think their guards are averaged to below center's average, right? But Brian O'Neill's better. And, you know, the Lions' best pass-rushing defensive lineman, you know, he is Za'Darius Smith, and he will be up against O'Neill. So there's no real advantage for the Lions from a pass rushing standpoint, but you're hoping that you can, find the holes, find the gaps against them in the run game. And they've done a decent job. They only gave up one sack last week to Green Bay, but like I mentioned earlier, Green Bay wasn't really running a lot of pressure type schemes either. They were trying to, bend don't break, defend the pass type of thing. So their offensive line is okay. I'm not overly impressed with it, but they're probably playing better than their skill level.
That's it for the offensive side of the ball. Let's flip over to the defense. They run a 3-4, but really a 2-5.
It's kind of, yeah. I mean, they really don't have a set defensive scheme.
Or 2-4.
I think they call it a 4. Yeah, I think they call it like a 4-2 is what they call it, but they're. It looks like a 3-4 because of the fact that they'll use their down defensive linemen in more traditional like 3-4 sets where they're two gapping and stuff like that as opposed to attacking, and then they'll use stand up pass rushing linebackers as well. But those stand up pass rushing linebackers will sometimes drop into coverage, similarly to like an off the ball linebacker. So it's a very hybrid front with no real traditional set. If you had to really like put a label on it, I might call it a 3-3. But again, even that maybe isn't doing it justice because they're not running three interior guys at once. It is kind of similar to like this 2-3 and then like six defensive backs or 2-4 and then five defensive backs. Like, they really only, okay. So, and they're only in base. Like we're spending all this time trying to tell you like what their base is. They're only in base like 15% of the time. They're in nickel 52% of the time. They're in dime 30% of the time. So like that front is always ever changing, and it typically has at least two down defensive linemen, two pass rushers, and at least one stand up off ball linebacker. And then sometimes they could add to any one of those three groups.
Two down linemen we'll see often will be Harrison Phillips at the nose, Jonathan Bullard. Also mm-hmm. see some Jerry Tillery, perhaps some Jalen Redman, some Jihad Ward, and Levi Drake Rodriguez.
Yeah, you see more Ward lately. Obviously, like you said, Harrison Phillips and Bullard are kind of their starters. Tillery gets in the third most, and then you see more Ward. Ward is a guy who can be a down guy, but he can also be an edge guy. So he's a little bit more position versatile, so he gets a little bit more opportunities, especially when they want to go like a little bigger. Ward is a guy that they might bring in. He's more positionless and not necessarily in a good way, but yeah, I think maybe position flexible is a little bit more kind, but for their scheme, they need guys that can play more than one spot, and he happens to be one of them. Harrison Phillips is the guy that's really the more of a standout. Bullard is more, like I said, he's more like the two gapping type guy, and same thing with Tillery. He's actually probably more of a nose than anything. But it's, these guys are all about occupying the front to allow opportunities for the pass rushing linebackers and off ball guys. And, the secondary, of course.
Pass rushing linebackers include Jonathan Greenard, Andrew Van Ginkel, the aforementioned Dallas Turner, Bo Richter, you mentioned Jihad Ward. Van Ginkel, two sacks against the Lions last time they played. Jonathan Greenard got one of them as well.
Van Ginkel, I believe, leads their team with like 11 and a half sacks or something along those lines. But really, Greenard has been the more productive, especially of late. Green Bay double-teamed Greenard on a third of their plays. He had eight... but he still managed to get eight pressures on 29 pass rushing reps. So he's He still managed to produce, even though he was getting double teamed. The caveat with this is 6 of his 8 pressures came in the fourth quarter when Green Bay was in obvious passing situation. So he was able to just pin his ears back and go. If the Lions, I don't anticipate the Lions being in those situations. And so because of that, it should make Greener, you know, have to stay home a little bit more and not be able to just pin his ears back. For reference, he had, he will play most of his time against Penei Sewell. Last game against Penei Sewell, he had 1 pressure when he played Penei. So,
off the ball linebackers, Ivan Pace Jr. and Blake Cashman with Kamu Grugier-Hill and Brian Asamoah the second.
It's really just Cashman and Pace. Cashman plays pretty much every down. He's going to be the guy that's on there in the sub packages. He's going to be the guy that's out there in base. No matter what, Cashman will be there. Pace is the guy that comes out there more in base. He's very fast. He had a good game against the Lions last time. And so if they decide to run more base, more two off-ball linebackers, you're going to see, you'll see more of them. Asamoah and Gruger Hill, like those guys are more special teamers. Like they shouldn't be out there unless there's some sort of injury. But Cashman's the guy you're going to see a lot. Pace is going to be a third of the time, maybe. And they're both good. They're both fast. That's a big key. They're speedy in this defense.
Defensive secondary corners are Stephen Gilmore, Shaquille Griffin, nickel is Byron Murphy Jr., along with Josh Metellus. We saw a lot of Metellus first time around. Mm-hmm. Other corners, Fabian Moreau, Dwight McLothern. And mm-hmm. then at the safeties, we got Harrison Smith and Cameron Bynum. We know them well. Reserves, Jay Ward, Theo Jackson.
They're all like average to above average players. Like, I don't think there's necessarily a guy that isn't good on the first or second line, right? Like, so there's a lot of depth. Josh Metellus is their multifaceted player. They'll put him at linebacker. They'll put him on the line of scrimmage. They do a lot of what the Lions do with Brian Branch, but they'll even more. He'll spread him out even further. He'll do everything from safety to slot work to outside corner to, you know, like I said, linebacker and et cetera. Harrison Smith and Bynum. Harrison Smith's not quite the player he was, but he's still pretty darn good. And so him and Bynum will be spending a lot of time there in like cover two. They spend about 25% of their time in cover two. They also spend about 25% of the time in cover three. And when they do go to those single highs, I think there's opportunities to attack them deep. Those will be situations where if you do think you can catch them in single high, that you're going to want to unleash JMO on some kind of corner routes, similarly to what they did against the Bears a couple weeks ago, a little bit against San Fran last week as well. But think of that 65-yard play against the Bears or 80-yard play against the Bears. That's if they run single high, that's you have the opportunity to catch them with if you call the right JMO play at the right time. Murphy is their best corner. I still don't know like if they would necessarily try and like lock him up on someone. They didn't really do that last time with any of these guys. Murphy will just, he's a guy that if he's staying on a side, you're just kind of accounting for. Opposite him is Stephen Gilmore, the ageless one, right? Mm-hmm. He's in his mid-30s or so now, but I think he's susceptible a little bit. He's not quite the guy he used to be. You know, both him and Harrison Smith have declined a little bit, but they're still good. And I don't know. They didn't really have a good answer for Amon-Ra last time. Gave up 8 catches for
112.
Yeah. And then I believe.
All right. So Khalif Raymond, Tim Patrick, Sam Laporta, and Jameson Williams combined for 7 receptions between those 4 players. And 84 yards or 85 yards. between the four of them. Now, the running backs, Gibbs Montgomery, 7 catches combined, 83 yards. So they worked it quite a bit to the backside of the backfield, not so much to the other peripheral receivers and Laporta, but it's kind of a different offense than since then.
So of his 8 catches for 112 yards, 7 of those catches came when they blitzed him, when they blitzed Goff. So 7 catches for 105 yards and the touchdown all came when the Vikings blitzed. So Vikings blitz, Amon-Ra is the
outlet. Get it to the security blanket.
Right? It's 100% what it is. It's worth pointing out that he had 8 receptions on 8 targets as well, right? Like he had no misses on that game. He was catching everything his way.
Right.
And they blitz, like I said, they blitz upwards of 40% of the time. And so this is a game where you're going to need the Goff Amon-Ra connection to be on point. This was a game where Sam Laporta, I don't remember if he was injured or if he just wasn't part of the
options. 1 for 25.
Okay, so he did play. Okay. He just wasn't part of, yeah, he wasn't part of the options. He is part of the options now. Like, he is a guy that they're, like I told you earlier, he's now getting utilized on like 20%. His target rate is like 22% now, as opposed to it being much lower in the teens before, low teens before. So he is a guy who's going to get utilized in this game as well. So I am expecting a lot of what we saw last game. Passes out to Gibbs, passes out to Craig Reynolds, quick passes to Amon-Ra in the blitz, quick passes to Sam Laporta when they blitz, and just kind of dink and dunk their way down the field and make it work. The key here is when they run their normal scheme, like when they're just in their, you know, and I say normal scheme, but like in their normal every down type of setting, they're in zone coverage most of the time, like almost all the time. On the year, they're like at 77%. But that's because the reason I say they're in zone all the time, even though it's like 77%, is because they switch up to man, like heavily man, on 3rd and 4th downs. Okay. So, and this is where Amon-Ra will come into play. When the Lions get into 3rd or 4th downs, the Vikings will blitz them. And when they blitz them, they will run man coverage behind the blitz because they want to press man you to try and take away your options. The problem is that Amon-Ra is almost impossible to lock down in that open setting, and he can get loose real quick. Sam Laporta gets loose real quick as well. And because those guys get loose quick, Goff on 3rd and 4th downs against man coverage has a quarterback rating of 138.8, which is the best in the NFL. So when they go to their 3rd down blitzes that they like to run and they like to be exotic, Goff is the best quarterback in the league against that style. And that's one of the reasons why the Lions have been so successful against this Minnesota defense, is because the tricks that they do to throw off all these other quarterbacks that aren't prepared for it, they don't fool Goff because he's, as we talked about, he's incredibly accurate. He's very anticipatory. He understands where his outlets are. He knows the scheme. And he is incredibly successful at finding the open man quickly, especially when you blitz him in these situations and run man behind it, which they do, like I said, like over half the time. So it also helps that the Lions have seen this defense 3 times in the past year and a half they've faced off against this team, right? Like in less than a year and a half. So this is now the fourth time that they're seeing this defense. So all this trick in smoke and mirrors and blitzing and disguising and stuff, Lions are going to be prepared for this. And this is the bread and butter of what makes Flores' defense so unique, is this ability to disguise what he's doing on the back end. The problem is that everything he does well, the Lions are the best team in the league at countering it. And that's why the Lions put up points, because they can stay on the field, continue drives, and when they get in the red zone, they score at a higher rate than any other team that the Vikings have had to face as well. So this is exactly the game plan here. It's you want to establish the run. You want to get Goff throwing the ball and just taking what's there. You want to be able to sustain the pressure and hold the pressure off as much as you can. And you want to reduce the turnovers and stay as accurate as you can with the ball. Be smart. I'd rather him take a sack than force a ball and get a turnover. But in those situations where they get tricky, Goff has almost always had the answer. So let them run their defense, because the things that they do well, the Lions, like I said, Lions have answers.
No. We'll see if Brian Flores can counteract those answers at all this Sunday. Kicking wise, got Will Reichard as the kicker, who made two of four field goals last week, all three of his extra points. On the season, he has made 21 of 26 field goals, so just over 80% of his kicks. With a long of 58, he's booted all 38 of his extra points right down the middle. His kickoff, his touchdown percentage is 84%. Touchback percentage, excuse me, it's 84% on kickoffs. Rookie kicker, I don't know. They go either way on him.
He's been good. He's gotten a little shaky, like you said, of late. Last week he missed a couple.
They didn't need him.
Yeah, he was very consistent for the first part of the season, like really, really consistent. Good from distance.
Didn't miss a field goal until November 3rd.
There you go. And now he's shown he's a bit human. It's very similar to Bates, where Bates was perfect for so long and then misses one and then, you know, also misses another. And now you see he's a little shaky, but they're still highly, highly competent and capable kickers.
Brian Wright is the punter and the holder. He's put up more pedestrian numbers, only 46.2 yards per kick on the season, only had a pair of punts against Green Bay, averaging 35.5 yards a kick. Once again, he wasn't vital to their winning effort.
Right. Against the Lions last time, he had an average of 48.3.
No, that's not bad. Return men. Got Brandon Powell returning the punts, ex-Lion, nothing to write home about there. Ty Chandler they've only returned 14 kicks on the season, so less than one a game. Chandler has more than half of those returns. Once again, decent return yardage, average team 24.4 yards, but nothing dangerous there.
Nope, I'm not.
Were the Vikings?
Yeah, I was going to say, they don't scare me. Their special teams is 24th in DVOA, so.
Where they are truly dangerous is at the long snapper position with Pro Bowler Andrew DePaola.
Yeah, that's about the extent of what I know.
Yeah, he's Pro Bowler. It's a big deal.
Mm-hmm.
All right, so that's the Vikings. Coming off a big 27-25 win over the Packers, looking to avenge their 31-29 loss to the Lions way back in October, right? That was October?
Yeah. Week 7.
Yeah, October 20th. All right. What do you think here? I already know what you think. 41 okay. to 6 Lions.
Well, I don't want to spoil the game here because you won last week.
Yeah, I did get the win last week, but Bryce was writing it.
Yep. Which was a smart move. You took the over on San Fran points, whereas I had them way down at 17. You took the over on that. So You get to pick the score first this week. Joe, no pressure. You probably need to win them all, though, from now on.
Right, yeah. And it, you know, it's Lions have scored over 34 points or more in the last four games after the lackluster performance on a Thanksgiving Day against the Bears. Lions offense is just about unstoppable. We saw that on Monday against the Niners. They're going to wear the black uniforms, though, and that's not. I don't like where the curse is going. It's. I know nobody likes to hear about the curse, and I know at the same time that the Lions do have to crush all these demons. It can't just be they have a nice easy road to the Super Bowl. They have like these major demons to crush. Now I don't like now they're sitting there. They're risking being the first ever 14 win team to be in a wild card game. You know, although it only bests the Titans by one game, you know, from back in 2000. But like all that effort, if you go end up going 14-3, you're on the road in LA or in more likely in Tampa, right? But I don't know. And when you do look at the Vikings performances over the season in total, they're a great team, excellent defense, and they're getting a whole lot out of Darnold, but.
Yep, not a lot of injuries, good balance.
Yeah, definitely not the injury issues the Lions have, but their wins don't look as nice when you look at them on paper, which doesn't mean a whole lot. But I don't know. I don't know. I want to believe, but I still fear. And I'm going to go with the Vikings 31-28 because also I know which way you're going, so I got to try to win the game. But I don't know. I don't like the way this one looks because if the Lions fall behind early, they're going to be in big trouble.
Well, Flores' defense in the past 2 years has given up 30 points just six times. Three of them, unfortunately for him, have been against the Lions, all in losses. So magic number for me is 30. If you can get to 30 or more, then you're going to beat this Vikings team. I think the Vikings can get to 30 on the Lions' defense. And so I think the Lions are going to have to go over that 30 mark, right? 30 is kind of the threshold. You got to get to 30. And if you can get above 30, then you're going to get the win. And for me, I agree with what you said. I think they're a good balanced team. They don't have a lot of injuries and they can be scary. The thing is they let teams in games. They don't play full 60 minutes. Even their best games of the year, are still close. Like they're talking about Sam Bradford having his career game and how sensational he was. They won by three, right? Wasn't it like or six or whatever? It was still like a one score game.
You said Sam Bradford.
I'm sorry, Sam.
All right, I thought that was kind of on purpose.
No, it was not. even when Sam Darnold plays his best, I don't think they're capable of keeping pace with the Lions offense. I just don't know if the Lions defense can slow them down. So I do think the Vikings are going to score 30. I'm going to give them exactly 30 because I'm going to say they move the ball down the field at least six times. Three of those, they get in the end zone. Three of those, they have to settle for field goals. Lions may only get down the field within field goal range five or six times as well. The difference is I think Lions convert in a red zone. They score points when they don't win. When the Vikings are settling for field goals, the Lions are scoring touchdowns and the Lions win 34-30.
Oh, I hope you're right. Oh, what a day that'll be. Mm-hmm. You know, we didn't mention like Ford Field's going to be rather raucous. You would think. It keeps getting, even though they've won two playoff games in there, is this now like the biggest game in Ford Field history, even though it's regular season? Just because there's, I don't know. Man, I guess it doesn't beat those playoff games, but
yeah,
it's the third biggest game in Ford Field history, I would say.
Yeah, I would think so. Like
for the Lions, there was a Super Bowl played in that building, but you know,
the NFL has only had three number one seed on the line scenarios in years past in week 18, where if the team can win it, they can clinch the one and all that, blah, 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 blah. And so, this is a rare occurrence to see this level of, importance put on a regular season game. And I look at how Dan Campbell has this team focused and believing in themselves, and that's why I believe that win in San Fran was important beyond just, exercising any demons that might have been in Santa Clara. But this is about showing them you can put up 40 on that team. You can do it against the next team too. And they're confident. They're playing with purpose. They have the right mentality. It's in Ford Field. There's just so many things that they have going in their favor. And even with the defense being susceptible and to giving up yards and points, you just got to capitalize on a mistake or two. You get a couple of stops, and that's all you need. Couple of red zone stops where they settle for field goals. Maybe an interception because Sam Darnold gets a little loose with the ball. Whatever it is, those couple of stops from the defense will be the difference, because the Lions offense, I think, will put up more points than they've ever put up on the Vikings in the last 2 years. I think they went 30, 30, and 31. This time, I think they hit 34. And it wouldn't be surprising if they scored more than that, because this offense is a juggernaut right now. And I think they have everything that they need to go into that building and walk away a winner.
I certainly hope you're right, Eric, and I can't wait till as it has been all season, as it's been for the last 2.5 seasons. We've done this podcast for almost 7 years now, and we've talked about this already. There were certain points where it's like, ah, oh, we got to watch and talk about this game, but now it's like you can't wait till Sunday or Monday, depending on whatever week it is, or Saturday or Thursday. This is a big one to be looking forward to.
Yeah, look, Campbell, his focus and his mentality and his ability to look at this game and say, this is why you do it, this is why you play it, and everything he says, the players just absorb and
Eat it
eat
up.
up. Oh, 100%. And so if this is his message, if his message is, this is why we play the game, go out there and win it, I fully expect that that's what they're going to go out and do.
Right. Comes to the reviews and ratings. We got a great one on Apple Podcasts for Michigan Dave. It's a real long one, 5-star one. Very positive of you and I. Points out the Apple Podcast glitch. He mentions he became a Patreon subscriber, assumed we took his money and disappeared to Bratislava. I think this is a reference to the movie Euro Trip, which is a good one to check out if you haven't. It's an old one. Nice cameo by Matt Damon in there. Probably shouldn't have mentioned that. I don't know. 20-year-old movies, I guess you could throw in spoiler alerts. That we did, and so he mentions the Apple Podcast glitch, which may be fixed. The 49ers podcast did end up on Apple Podcasts, took forever to get there, but it did get there. Now we have the new Spotify podcast glitch. We could deliver the Bears game, which Apple Podcasts didn't get, but now it doesn't have the 49ers podcast. Of course, it has to happen at this time of year. We are working on the issue with the folks that can help us with the issue, and they thought the issue was cured, and it doesn't look like it is. So, Spotify people won't even know because they can't even hear this. Although you could always go to the website, although those Spotify people can't hear that.
Hopefully the glitch has happened now 2 weeks in a row, to the point that now people recognize that they can just go to the website and listen to it if they need to. Like, I saw a lot of people, saying, hey, look, works great on the website. And the thing is I think what people might not recognize is that I put it up on the website on Thursday night, even though it's not, it's designed to be a Friday morning type
Right,
show.
listen.
I put it up Thursday night when we get done recording. So, you could always, if you're in a different time zone and you're up and you're early, it should be there on the website for you if you're ahead of us time wise. So check the website. That's the message I guess I'm trying to hammer home here. If you check the website, it's going to be there. We have
Yeah, hopefully
pep
this is a short-term thing. Hopefully within the next week, it's Because once again, like we'll have these problems every once in a while. And seemingly, it's every year, and it's a problem for 2 weeks, usually around this time of year, and then it's not a problem again. Then we
It's
forget what we ended up doing, and then we have to try to solve the problem again, but it's usually something different.
so weird because it's well, yeah, it's a different thing every time, and we just pepper these guys with these questions, and they're like they're so confident that they fixed it, and then they haven't, and it's just I don't. It's maddening. It's
Well,
maddening.
man,
I
what are
know
you
it's
gonna do?
frustrating for fans too, and
Yeah,
I
yeah,
you know,
yeah. That's the
it,
worst part, and we don't want them to get
yeah.
frustrated with the show. And hopefully,
Exactly.
they're not.
Yeah, look, bear with us because
We will try to rebuild your confidence in us.
it's I it's very frustrating for us to, you know, I publish it Thursday night, and then I wake up in the morning and it should be on all the platforms. And when it's not, it is infuriating because then I have to start my apology tour. And I have, you know, I have to go on all the social medias, and I have to explain that it's still a, and it's not our fault. I mean,
Well, it is in a way. I
in a
mean, we're
way, I
not
guess it is because
we're,
we're
we
not,
don't have a ton of
we don't,
experience, you know,
exactly.
this
We don't have the skills,
in our
but,
business either of us.
like, so
Hard to
we're
work on.
relying on tech support here, and they're just, it's frustrating. So thank you for
That's
bearing
enough
with
of
us.
that.
Yeah, thank you for bearing with us is where I was,
Yeah.
what I really wanted to say, I guess.
That's it. You liking the college football playoff? How much do you enjoy that? Some crazy results.
Yeah, I don't
Cam
know.
Scatabow is the is perfect lion.
I think he ends up in LA with the Chargers.
Yeah, no, I guess he basically he's a good Harbaugh back.
I feel like Harbaugh will overpay for him. It just inevitable seems like that way.
Got three
Geez.
Northern teams in the Final Four. Who would have thunk
Yeah.
that when it's legal to pay players, all of a sudden Northern schools are showing better than the Southern schools? Who would have imagined?
I don't know. I was kind of hoping for Oregon and Georgia to get
Yeah,
wins. I like their style of play, but both lost,
well,
so.
certainly you don't like Ohio State or Penn State or Notre Dame.
Yes, that is all correct.
It doesn't, it to me, it doesn't matter now. See, I got a different relationship with this because Michigan won last year. So, like, the team I hate most already won. So, what does it matter if it's one of the other teams I don't like wins again this year? Part of me wants to see Penn State win now
Oh
because, like,
no. James
James,
Franklin is
well,
terrible.
he's in battle. He's a terrible coach. But then, what
Yeah.
are we all gonna, if he wins the national championship, what are we all gonna do? Like, what can we say? You know, like, what a
I
mess this all turns into.
help me remember who plays who next. I
It's going
don't.
to be Penn State and Notre Dame, and it'll be
Okay.
Ohio State and Texas.
Okay. If it's Ohio State, Penn State, I'm going to be sick. Like it's going to
Why?
be
I don't know. I mean,
because
that's also interesting. I hate Ohio State as well, but it's fascinating that Ryan Day keeping his job, going all out to keep his job. It would be one of the great job savings of all time, right?
no,
If he wins, even if
he
he,
can.
I would think if he made the title game, he's not going to lose his job. It's like, all right, he did enough.
Yeah, he's going to keep his job, and that's fine by me too. I don't care.
Yeah, well, no,
He
you would
always.
be fine with that. Yeah.
But yeah, I don't know. I know these are like four historic
Yeah, this
schools, and
very
there's,
next Final Four when it comes to
yeah,
the cachet of the programs.
I'm gonna say I'm not in love with any of their styles of play, and so I don't have a team that I'm like, ooh, I really want to watch this offense go to work because none of them really are overly exciting to me that I like want to go out of my way to sit down and watch.
Is there a future lion on one of these four teams?
Oh, you know, I'm sure. I haven't gone through the
No,
list
I
or
know
anything
we're
like that.
still a
So,
little early on
yeah.
the draft boards, and it's still like it could even be a player 2 or 3 years from now. And
Oh yeah,
I was
sure.
kind of more looking at the seniors or the guys that would be leaving for the draft, and if
Well,
you know
and
who
that,
fits a lot. I mean, it's
yeah.
watch the defenses. You know, like, I don't think they're going to
Yeah.
be going heavy on offense, except for we talked about an offensive guard potentially.
Inevitably, you have a lot of when these schools go deep into the playoffs, then they end up having a lot of guys that get drafted a little bit higher because they're well known. Their scouts get
They've
more film on them.
performed.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, Abdul Carter from Penn State is a really good edge player, but I don't think he's going to be there. I could see both the Ohio State edge guys appealing to the Lions. Sawyer maybe a little bit more Derek Barnes-ish, in that he could be kind of like your Sam stand-up pass rusher type of guy. I don't know if there's any other. I think Penn State, yeah, both Penn State and Ohio State edge guys on both sides. I think those are guys that you should keep eyes on. Texas has a pair of tackles, offensive tackles, but again, I don't know if they'd be taking an offensive tackle in the first round necessarily. Ohio State has a guard, Donovan Jackson, who's really good. Keep eyes on him. It's those are the guys off the top of my head. I think Ohio State has another defensive tackle too, but I don't even remember his name or so.
Ohio State's the betting favorite now, right? I would assume.
I'd imagine.
I bet it's Ohio State Notre Dame is probably what the let me check the.
Okay.
I
I
would
think
assume that's what the expected championship matchup would be.
if I'm not mistaken, Notre Dame has a good corner, like a 6 foot corner that's pretty good. I could look him up real fast. Morrison. Yeah. He's a guy who I've had tabbed before. Let me check receivers. I'll just now that I got my list open here.
Ohio State favored by five and whoop.
Ibuka's a pretty good receiver, but I don't know where he'll go. Go ahead. Ohio State's favored.
Ohio State favored by 5.5. Notre Dame favored by 1.5.
Is Notre Dame? I don't know. Well, those are a handful of guys that I recalled. Hopefully, that's enough to keep your eyes. Most of the guys that like, I think the Lions are going to take probably aren't going to be playing in these games. But if they are, like Jack Sawyer. Has always been a guy that I've said,
Fits
yeah,
the Lions,
he'd fit for what they
except for
want
his
to do.
behavior after the Ohio
It
State Michigan game. This is your red
correct,
flag.
correct, yeah.
But everybody does it now. All everybody does is their poor sports in all these games.
It seems like it, right? My goodness.
I'm thinking of the schools, and I'm probably going to miss Taylor Decker's an Ohio State alum. But the four of these schools,
For the
not a ton of
Lions,
Lions. Yeah, not a ton of Lions come from
you
these
got
four schools.
for Michigan. You've got
No,
Aiden and Graham.
we're not talking about
Oh,
Michigan.
sorry,
We're talking about
sorry,
these, but
sorry.
I know where your mind is all the time. It's okay.
I defaulted there back into my old habits. For
These final four teams, not a ton
Ohio
of
State, you've got just Taylor, right?
used to have Jonah Jackson, but
Boy, you got so many. Alabama guys, right?
and
Like,
Iowa guys, and
yes.
yeah, but these aren't the pipeline schools for the Lions, so
Let's see. Well, you had both Aquaras at one point,
right,
but you don't
not
have either
anymore.
of those guys anymore.
That was not those were not
Brock Wright. Brock Wright played at Notre
oh yeah,
Dame.
that's a Notre Dame
There
guy,
you
yep.
go. And I think Decker's the only Ohio State guy. Allen Robinson
Oh, that's Penn State guy.
played at Penn State.
He's a
And
local guy.
then I don't think they have a guy from Texas on the roster. They used to, but not anymore. Nope, not that I'm aware of anyways. Not that I can think of. So, yeah, that's it. Maybe just one guy from each school.
Right.
Oh, I think Jamarco Jones also played at Ohio State, but he's on the practice squad. Yeah, I don't know if that counts.
We're getting pretty deep.
Well, but then Chris Smith is also on the practice squad, played at Notre Dame. So, but that's it. That's all I can think of.
That's enough of that.
Yeah.
That's something to look forward to, though, coming up. That's it. I don't have anything else.
Yeah, we will know by the time the Lions play who the winner and the loser will play in the wild card. So the winner, of course, gets the bye. The loser will get the 5 seed, and we will know, will it be Tampa Bay? Will it be the Falcons if they somehow jump in, weirdly? Or if it'll be the Rams, because the Rams are also resting. So if, the Rams lose and Tampa wins, you could see a switch there. Or if the Rams and Tampa loses and Falcons win, I think the Falcons – or actually, I don't think the Rams game matters then. But, you could see the Falcons jump in there. So Falcons, Bucks, Rams, those are the games to watch in the early games to see who's going to end up in the 3 or 4 spot. And then we'll know, all the outcomes by the time the Lions are on the field.
All right. Well, that's all I've got. I think that's enough for one day. We've gone on quite a bit. Good luck to those Lions on Sunday night. And until next time, let's go Lions.